time aside to have for whatever. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Let's see. Ah, here we are. Awesome. It's showing us live now, so I think we're good. Just wait a second to make sure that. And then let me just put up Zoom so I can see myself. Oh, good. Here we are. So let's just see. I'm going to check the chat box here. Oh, good. Okay, we got the chat box going. Okay, good. I'll get us started now. Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today I'm with my friend Raphael Ray from Radiant Reality. Raphael is a former alumni of one of my programs, has an awesome YouTube channel, tarot expert, has lots of brilliant things to say about tarot, does his own regular forecasts and updates, also knows a lot about astrology. Really happy to be collaborating today with Raphael. We're going to break down the full moon in Aries along with Mars square to Pluto. That's our agenda for the day. But before I go any further, Raph, thanks for being here today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. As I always say, it's an honor to be here. You are definitely one of my go-to astrologers. And for anybody that's hoping to take the course, please absolutely do it. I think one of the things that I really loved about the course that you offer, so many of the questions of why certain things are the way they are in astrology, those are the questions that you're going to have answered. And it really, really helped a lot to see it. In a way, you actually helped it come alive for me more so. So that was really, really, it's a pleasure to take. And yeah, it's wonderful to be here. So thank you.
Yeah, and for people who don't know Raphael Ray, if you want to go to Raph's YouTube channel, the name of it is Radiant Reality. Is that correct for the YouTube channel name?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got close to 80,000 subscribers going on over there. Every time I turn around, it's growing. And you have fantastic regular updates on tarot and astrology, and but particularly for me, because I don't know as much about tarot. That's not my primary divinatory language. I turn to Raph for insight about the cards, about what's happening in the sky through the lens of the cards. He's just really special in his ability to blend astrology with intuitive readings of tarot symbolism. I always learn a lot from not only watching his program, but also I've had the privilege of being on your channel a few times and, you know, doing our crossovers as we do. So it's a real pleasure to have you over here on my channel today to share the love and take a look at the big transits this week.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. That's a huge honor to me, by the way. I remember watching your channel a long time ago. The way that you spoke about and conceptualized Saturn for me just really changed all of my understanding of the planet and the symbolism and the spirituality of the planet as well. So really very, very humbled by that praise. Thank you.
Well, as we're sitting here having a little love fest of appreciation for each other. And
Let's get into
thank you everybody for being here, by the way, in the chat box. Yeah, we're gonna dive right in. Tell us where you're coming from, by the way, in the chat box. I'm gonna read some of them off. I see New York City, I see Chico, California, I see London, I see Tucson, I see Northern Cali, I see Raleigh, North Carolina, Germany, Estonia, Finland. Amazing. So keep it coming. Tell us where you guys are tuning in from. We're doing this live stream today. We're probably gonna be probably spending about the next hour together. So hopefully you guys can stay with us. But obviously, if for some reason you have to leave and you're like, man, I wish I could have caught the whole thing, it'll be posted later, and Raph should be posting a version of it on his YouTube channel eventually as well. So but let's get into it. I'm gonna put the real-time clock up on the screen, and we are going to talk today about the major action in the sky this week, which is a full moon in the sign of Aries, as well as Mars moving into the square with Pluto. Now, the sun just passed through a square with Pluto, so we've got lots of Pluto-y Pluto stuff going on. I believe there was, I'm trying to remember his name, Colin Powell, I think his name is. He was a former U.S. Secretary of State, maybe, or defense. I can't remember his official title now. I'm sorry, I'm blanking, but I think he passed away. I read that somewhere today. I hope to God I'm not wrong about that. But at any rate, certainly the symbolism of the Pluto and the sun square to Pluto has already been in the sky. So we're already seeing that, you know, in full effect right now. And now we've got Mars coming into the square with Pluto, Mercury stationing to turn direct, Jupiter stationing to turn direct, Saturn recently turned direct, Pluto recently turned direct. So it's just been a big momentum shift coming. And not surprisingly, as that big momentum shift is happening in the sky overall, we see a couple of planets hitting Pluto as a full moon's coming through. So there's some kind of dynamic changes in the air. There's a dynamic change in the air happening right now. Here's what you can see. Raf, can you see my chart on the screen?
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's the Mars in Libra coming through the square to, let's see here, coming through the square to Pluto. And we're going to watch how this perfects. So if I advance this just a couple days at a time, you're going to see that here's by Thursday into Friday, that's October 21st and 22nd, we see Pluto and Mars in the square to one another. Now, that's happening as the sun is also shifting into Scorpio, which is Mars's sign. So it's a pretty big, it's a really big shift. And we also know that on Wednesday morning, this is in the United States, Wednesday morning, October 20th, we're also going to see the full moon in Aries coming through. So here's the full moon in Mars's sign, opposing the sun and Mars in Libra, while there's a little T-square action with Pluto. So it's a very dynamic full moon. And I think what we want to do today, and Raf, tell me if you think this is best. I think what we'll do is we'll start off by talking about our impressions of this archetypal combination in general, and talk about what we might expect sort of all of us overall. And then maybe we'll go through the 12 rising / sun signs together. Does that sound good, Raf?
Yeah, brilliant. Sounds great.
Why don't you lead us off? What do you think about this? What are you getting from the cards, from your own intuitive practices and your own practices as a diviner about this full moon in Aries with the Mars square Pluto, maybe everything else going on in general right now?
Yeah. Okay. So the first, obviously we know it's not going to be easy. We know that this one's definitely going to be a bit more intense than some of the others that that we've had this year. And, you know, intensity has been a big part of this year regardless. I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of the year as well. And in terms of the backdrop, this year is ruled by the number five. And anywhere you get the number five, you're always going to have a little bit of strife and a little bit of challenge. So as we come to this point, I kind of feel like this is, in a lot of ways, it's the final tip of the pressure cooker, right? This is where it all kind of comes to a head. And this is where we're going to really find a way. And the way that I kind of see this happening is we're going to have the intensity of the full moon. And then once that gives way, we're actually going to see some real change, which is really, really nice. You know, I think we can all agree that we're ready for some change and some forward momentum. So one of the things that I've written here is use this heightened emotional strength and power to overcome your challenges. So that intensity, if you can take that energy and direct it at whatever challenges or issues you might have had, you can actually make some really amazing headway with things that maybe you've been struggling with for a while. So some of the combinations of cards, and I actually wanted to talk about the energy of a square. I know you said previously that the energy of a square is likened to Mars itself, right? So it's kind of got that irritating energy to it. But also the way that I understand and conceptualize squares is it's an energy that makes you uncomfortable enough to say, I don't like this experience, so I'm going to do something about it. And that really is the most positive way that we can use this energy. So obviously with Mars, we've got action, energy, passion, excitation. but we've also got that angry kind of irritating, stressful energy as well. You add to that the power sort of dynamic of Pluto. And what I feel with the energy of Pluto, it releases the power in a situation. So now we've got this all taking place with the energy of the full moon as well, where emotions are much closer to the surface. And suddenly we see that there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of power here that is palpable, but is also likely to bleed out, bleed through, explode. It's a volatile combination. So looking at this through the tarot aspect and even the numerological energy, this I found really interesting. So the full moon at 27 degrees, 2 and 7 gives you 9. 9 in numerology is actually ruled by Mars. So we've got a very Aries full moon at this time. On top of that, the number 9 is all about endings and completions and culminations. And this full moon, a full moon is a time of completions. Like one of the ways that I conceptualize this as well is it's like when a woman is pregnant, she comes to full term. It's the end of the pregnancy, but the beginning of the life of the child. And so we get that sort of wonderful dynamic of a beginning with an end, you know, and that kind of dynamic that shifts. And then finally, 9 being the number of enlightenment and ascension. Enlightenment in terms of it's the understanding and the amalgamation of all the numbers that came before it, and the number of ascension in terms of it looks out onto the master number vibrations of 11, 22 and 33. So once the rubble from this full moon has kind of cleared, I really feel that we're going to have this wonderful push forward with a real strong sense of confidence and clarity over, okay, what has gone is gone. What didn't make the cut or the grade is done. But what is left, we can absolutely stand with, stand on, build with, build on. That's how I kind of see this in that energy. Are you okay for me to go on with some of the card combos that I've got?
Yes, please
this?
Do. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. All right. I just really want to make sure I wasn't talking too much. All right, so we've got the Sun in Libra, but we've got Mars in Libra at the moment. And so the way that you could see that is the Tower card being that Martian energy in the sign of Libra, which is the Justice card, right? So suddenly we start to see legal matters and challenges coming to a head. Suddenly we start to see surprise understandings and or in some way, shape or form, you could even see this as surprise twists of, and I don't want to say so much fate, but surprise moments or energies that come into balance situations where they've been completely imbalanced in some way. On the opposite end of that spectrum, we have the High Priestess representing the moon, and we've got the Emperor representing the sign of Aries. So the moon in the sign of Aries. When you combine these two cards, one way that you could read this is it actually represents like an undercover policeman or an investigation that's going on behind the scenes of a legal nature that now may suddenly start to become prominent or noticed in some way, shape or form. One of the challenges with this combination that I didn't really like, and it's I was almost not going to use the High Priestess, but my intuition said, no, that's right. Is this could be violence against women, which very, very possible, as I'm sure you know, Tutor, with the combination of energies that we're seeing. And then finally, on the other end of the spectrum, so you could use the Death card to represent Pluto in the sign of Capricorn, which is the Devil and the Death card. So this could bring a potentially violent or extreme end to something. And I touch wood, someone. The other way that you could pull this as well is if you took the Death card out and put in the Judgment card. And suddenly, although it's similar, we get a very different understanding when you start to combine these energies. So with this pairing, what I put here was the end of obsession or fear-based compulsion. right? And then when you think about these energies all starting to combine and speak to each other, that's when you start to get a bigger and broader picture of how we can, as a collective, start to really ascend. And with that tower card in the mix of all of this, it does suggest that something is quite quickly going to come crashing down. And what I say to people with the tower card is, once everything has fallen and the dust is settled and the rubble is cleared, whatever the tower leaves behind is terra firma. You can trust that implicitly because it survived the thing that can't be survived. So that's some of the ways that this could play out in that regard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love, there's so many great images there. The cards are so helpful to helping us visualize and kind of, you know, associative images help a lot when it comes to planets, because planets and signs, you know, they can be very evocative, but a lot of it depends on our ability to draw on relevant images to help bring the heavens down to earth. And that's why I love the use of the tarot. And you did a really nice job. I think one thing that's really important to remember is let's think about the meaning of a full moon philosophically from the ancient perspective. So if you think about the sun and the moon conjoining in their syzygy, the idea is that spirit sort of impregnates matter, that there's an intention or that there's an ideal image that is then going to be born out in the material soup, you know, and it's going to just like, insemination is to pregnancy. And then the child gestates and grows. And then, you know, the baby comes into the world. So the one thing about full moons is, as you were saying, is that you're going to see the seed of the cycle come to be made manifest. But of course, because the moon is not an original light, but a reflective light, there's some way in which every full moon offers us a lesson or an ability for us to reflect upon what the seed was, you know, because whatever the fruit of a cycle, whatever comes about at a full moon, it's never going to be in the material world. It can only be some kind of reflection of the ideal. You know, it's going to fall short in some ways because it's impermanent and it changes from moment to moment and it's always in flux. And so full moons are always this moment for us to reflect upon, well, what were our desires, you know? And sometimes in receiving the fruit of something, you realize, like, for example, having children. Although I love my children and my children are easily the best thing that's ever happened to me, along with probably, you know, my wife, they also have made me realize, well, how idealistic was I thinking this is what having children would be like? You know, it's just going to be this like cakewalk in the park, you know, like, you know what I mean? And so there's always some way in which whatever comes to manifest at a full moon is always also helping us, hopefully, to refine our desires so that more and more our desire comes in alignment with what is, what's present, what's inside of us, what's eternal and abiding, which doesn't mean that we shun the material world or anything like that. But the full moon is always going to be, it's never going to be exactly what we think it is, or it's never going to be exactly as we hope it will be, or as we get it, it will be passing away quickly, or whatever the case might be. So there's something manifesting, and then there's always an opportunity for reflection upon the fruit of a cycle or the fruit of the karma that's coming to pass. And so then what we look at is like, well, what type of full moon is it? And, you know, with this one, it's a Marsy full moon. It's a very fiery Marsy full moon. And then we go, okay, well, what's Mars doing? Because, you know, the moon is not naturally, it's not the moon's home. So it's in Mars's home. So we need to look at the guest host relationship, right? Moon is in Mars's temple. Where is Mars? Well, it's opposing Mars, who's in the opposite sign of Libra, the feminine temple of Venus, the sign associated with justice and with the balance, the scales. And it's squaring Pluto, Lord of the underworld. So this is a karmic, you could say this is a full moon of karmic reckoning, you know, where justice and things that are coming up from the underworld to confront us. So what's being shown to us, in other words, at this full moon, those two cards right there, the justice and the judgment card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Those two cards are, you know, it's perfect depiction, because when this full moon, you know, rises, what's coming into view is something that we perhaps needed to see, that's going to confront us with something from the depths, from the unconscious. And when I say confront, that's the Mars word, right? It's going to come up, and we're going to have to look at it, and it can involve challenge, confrontation, which is why all of those images of like lawsuits or potential things that have been maybe stirring below the surface that you couldn't see that come up, and then you have to deal with them. For example, I had to have people who go to the dermatologist, you're probably familiar with, you'll go in, you get a check, and they'll say, oh, you know what? That mole looks like it might be precancerous. We don't know. We're going to cut it off. We're going to cut that mole off. So I actually had that happen this morning. I had to go and have a mole removed. Well, it's a very small little microcosmic example of what this full moon is all about. It's saying, here's something that's growing. Maybe it's a little shady. You don't know what it is. You might have to deal with it, or even cut something out of your life. Or there may be a kind of karmic bill that's due that balances the scales somehow. And it may involve that edge of Mars, which in this case for me this morning was a scalpel, you know? So like, even though it didn't really hurt, I had my it was on my toe. So like my toe was numb or whatever, but it's those kinds of things, both societally and personally, that can come up and seize us this week, especially because that Mars is in Libra, where things can get balanced out. And there's some sense of reckoning. And then with Pluto, the added depth, intensity, catharsis, and purgation, that it comes up from the underworld, and that there can be agitation or frustration around it. And one last thing, which is the theme of women, potentially, when you have Mars in Venus's sign like that, I really couldn't have agreed with you more there, unfortunately, about the potential for, you know, this, for example, I'm fully anticipating that this week I will get a load of questions in my horary, you know, my horary inbox, or in my client practices, that will have to do with divorce litigation, or that may have to do with breakups or affairs, or, you know, this kind of thing. And people who may be more or less reluctant to have to deal with that or look at it or whatever. I would not be surprised at all if that was the theme for the week. In fact, I already had some of that coming in over the weekend, several relationship horaries in the past 4 or 5 days. So I think you're also spot on about the potential for this to be aimed at Venusian things, which could include love, relationships, negotiations between people where you're looking for some kind of diplomacy, but there might be an impasse of some sort, or also the general idea of, anything related to feminism or women, and potentially like violence or unfairness with some respect toward women, or actually any, I think you could extend that to any kind of prejudice that is oriented towards someone because of their gender or sex identity category in general.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's kind of perfect as well. It's funny, when you mentioned the surgeon, the emperor can be a medical professional, or somebody that works as a surgeon. So it was really interesting for you to put that in there. The other thing is as well, I totally get this. And I kind of, just to give like a tiny little tangent. So Pluto's been obviously moving through Capricorn for a while now. And the way that I've come to understand that is 2008, I think it was, he comes into Capricorn. And I kind of feel that this is like, you know, imagine Capricorn being a corporation and everyone's like, oh no, the auditors are in. Right. And he's like, you know what? It's cool. I'm just going to pull up the curtains, look behind the filing cabinet, kind of see what's going on in there. Saturn's out, you know, the CEO is doing his thing, traveling the zodiac and gathering information and stuff. And then when he came into Saturn, came into Capricorn, and we had that massive conjunction and stuff, I kind of feel like since then we've been seeing all of this stuff that's like the fallout of everything that's taking place. And what I've put here, the reason I've mentioned that is I kind of feel like Pluto, it shows where honesty and truth are needed before we're going to be granted passage. And that's what the full moon is really kind of saying to us. And with Pluto squaring that the moon, it's almost like, well, you know this now, but have you dealt with this in order to push forward with that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. It's what you said at the beginning that I'm remembering now, which is that you said, this full moon, because it comes just prior to Pluto, Mars square, to Mars square and Pluto, can catalyze some kind of action that comes about due to the sort of revelations or the revelatory nature of the full moon. And I think that's spot on, that this week can cause, it creates a bit of a gestalt, especially with things where you've reached your end, kind of the end of the rope with it, you know, whether it's your own thing or something else, or you kind of go, oh, that's what it is, or I can't deal with this anymore, or something has to change, or something has to give. I think of in the I Ching, I want to say it's number, hexagram number 36 in the I Ching, which is often translated as critical mass. And it shows the ridge pole sagging to potentially break a support in the beam of the house, a little bit like the tarot card of, or the tower card, excuse me. And, but I also like what you said, which is that when you do take action this week, you know that in dealing with whatever you're dealing with, you're probably going to be good going forward if you go ahead and deal with it now. Don't put it off. Might be a temporary setback. Maybe it delays something. Maybe there's a feeling of like frustration and being held back from where you wish you could be already. Maybe there's a feeling of agitation with having to deal with something. But as you said, the terra firma is beneath the rubble. So in dealing with it, or in dealing with the destructive elements of these transits this week, you do know that you're getting a firmer foundation to stand on going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of see this as like a massive, I love the way that you brought the surgeon in there, because it's like, yeah, whatever goes now, let it go with grace, right? Yeah. That's the energy of Mars in Venus's sign, let's say, and the same with the sun being in Libra. If you can find or tap into that grace energy that Libra kind of puts forward, but keep the action, keep the directness and the assertiveness, and even, you know, allow yourself to find that steely energy of doing what needs to be done, the results, I think, in the longer term, let's say, could be great, actually.
Especially given, I think, that this is really, this transit here, you know, mid to late October, is just 2 months out from our final Saturn Uranus square, which, you know, is, that's going to, and we're hoping to meet again in December to talk about that and Venus's big retrograde with Pluto. So I think some of what's happening right now is probably, some of what we're talking about is probably wrapped up in the momentum carrying us toward those changes in December as well.
Yeah, I think those are going to be huge. That Venus retrograde, just on an intuitive level, I've been getting some really interesting information. And one of them was that on the wider world stage, we're going to see some really weird stuff with the world's money and finances. Like, it, at first, maybe probably people don't really notice, and then all of a sudden it's like, bam, surprise, you know, and everyone's like, oh, okay, this is happening. I think it's going to be interesting.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Raf. Keep going
that was it.
Well, I was just thinking, the last time we had, you know, Venus retrogrades, when Venus is moving from the evening star to the morning star, were in the ancient world, were heralds of war, you know, the coming of civil, Venus representing civil harmony. Civil strife goes into the morning star position. It becomes much more aggressive and tends to represent periods of social separation before eventual union again. So this Venus is always doing this dance between sort of war goddess in the morning and sort of pleasant diplomatic harmonizer in the evening. As that change is happening in a conjunction with Pluto, real close to the Saturn Pluto conjunction point, you know, think about what we had during the last Venus retrograde, which was June of 2020, when we had, at least here in the United States, we had the demonstrations, protests, in some case riots, after George Floyd was killed. And so that, you know, the last time, the environment of Venus retrogrades, just, it's, they're not always like that, where it's so massive on a social collective level. Like, you will see social unrest, relational unrest, and the need to separate out core value differences, and sometimes with real, even violence involved. So that, with Pluto amplifying that in December, I think, Yeah, it's and then Saturn Uranus present in December too. So it's like, oh, that's such an intense December is, I don't know. I mean, I marked it on my calendar as along with maybe around springtime this past year, some of the big transits that were happening then with eclipses and Saturn Uranus again in like June. But it is one of the biggest months of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually looking forward to talking about that. One of the things that I've put here that you, because you've really helped me build this picture now, and it makes a lot of sense when you explain the Venus retrograde like that. I almost feel like this full moon and the fact that Mars is now moving through one of Venus's signs, it's almost like it's armoring up. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we're not going to need this when this moment comes. We're not going to need that when this moment comes. So let's just deal with what we've got now. Let's cut away the superfluous and get to it. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Raph, how do you feel about shifting and going into the 12 signs and taking a look at maybe Mars square Pluto, the full moon for each 12 signs and just giving us some cards per sign?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a deck of separated majors. And I have a deck, like a full deck. So I'll pull one of each for each sign, if that's okay.
That is fine. And I'm not going to say as much. I'm going to let you lead, but I will, after each sign, I will add just a little bit of commentary on the astrology as we see it on the wheel here, and just try to highlight some of the astrology in relation to what your take is for each sign. Now, to be clear, when you're listening to this, guys, we're going to go Aries through Pisces. You could take this as Aries rising or as Aries sun sign. I recommend Aries rising or whatever the rising sign is, because that'll match up with your whole sign house chart of your birth chart. So that's my recommendation, but you can do what you guys want. You could even do it for your moon sign if you wanted to, but we'll start with Aries.
Cool. All right. Before we start, as always, I would like to bless my decks of cards with all forms of love, light, peace, prosperity, and abundance. And I pray that whatever messages come through, they are for everybody's highest vibrational good. All right, so let's get into it. For Aries, your destiny card or your main card, a tutor, please do the honors.
All right, stop.
Okay, so you have the Hierophant card, which in this deck is actually called Faith. And in a lot of ways, I actually feel like this could be a moment where you're tapping into your own authority. Remember, the Hierophant card has links to the bigger institutions of life that we can't necessarily get round. But this is about you finding that for yourself inside yourself and finding a way to use that where you can burst through the constraints, really, of the environment that you're kind of caught in, let's say. The other thing with the Hierophant card or the Faith card in this, it really does invite you to ask yourself, what do I have in place here that's going to help me get through what I'm experiencing right now? And with that, you have the Moon card, which, you know,
Aries full moon.
Absolutely. And there it is, right? So the confusion that might come in at this time for Aries is, what do my belief structures or understandings of the world say about the way that I'm living my life? And what can I do to change them? That really is it. This is a time, if you're an Aries, if ever you had power to make a big change in your life, it's right now.
Nice. Beautiful. Let me put up the real-time clock. So just riding on what Raph said here, you can see that the full moon is going to land in your first house. Let me just actually push this forward just so we can get the full moon depicted in here. So here's the full moon. This is coming in Tuesday, Wednesday of this week, October 19th and 20th. And when you have the full moon in your first house, the mirror is shining back on yourself, on your own psyche, on your vitality, your body, your health, your sense of identity, your dharma, meaning your sense of sacred duty. But it's being called into dialogue with the expectations that others have for you or of you, with a big stellium in Libra in the seventh. You had a Mercury retrograde there recently. You got the ruler of the full moon, Mars, in that house, and it's hitting the square to Pluto. So the expectations of others here are not just relational, although they might be rooted in intimate relationships, but they're societal. So societal and interpersonal relationships and the pressures that they are placing on you to change or transform, or the need to resist those calls to conformity if they're in any way toxic, but you probably will feel those very strongly. And so I would see those as, you know, really nice correlates with the Hierophant Moon card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the Hierophant being a card of society as well, you know, the bigger, wider stage, let's say. All right, for Taurus, when you're ready, a tutor, please say. Ooh, the cards have spoken.
Did one fly out?
Yeah, they've all gone kind of everywhere. So. Taurus has the Wheel of Fortune. This is really nice. So this could be a moment where you are in receipt of the results of things that you've already put out into the world or into motion in some way, shape or form. What I love most about this card, use this time to allow yourself to be navigated to where it is that you feel either intuitively pulled or where you feel like almost kind of like the hand of fate is kind of shoving you in a specific direction. Even if it feels uncomfortable, the reason I say this is the Wheel of Fortune always has us in the right place at the right time to get what we're supposed to get from what we've already done. So this could be a really nice time for the Taurians among us, actually. Let's see, to clarify on that, we have the Five of Pentacles. All right, so I know a lot of people are freaking out because the Five of Pentacles is not an easy card. It's not a great card. One of the ways that you could see this is, this could be an end to financial challenges and or hardships. It could also be a time where anything that's felt like a burden on the material plane is now able to be released. And it might come suddenly, it might come, I don't want to say intuitively, I kind of feel like it's more divinely orchestrated than that. So if you feel yourself being pushed in a certain direction, go, because the chances are something's likely to be removed from you that allows you to really step forward. And finally, for any of you who have had health challenges and or issues, you could find a way of managing those things now that just didn't, not that it didn't exist, but wasn't present at the time.
Perfect. I love this one because this full moon, if you're a Taurus, is going to be in your 12th house and it'll be opposing Mars in the sixth, but also you're looking at Pluto square in the ninth, and the image of the Five of Pentacles, the two out in the cold outside of what looks almost like a church or a cathedral is interesting here too. There, I would almost say that there might be a test of perseverance and faith that you could see, because these two houses, the 12th and the 6th, were associated with, the 6th was called Mala Fortuna, which would mean when the Wheel of Fortune serves up something frustrating or a challenge or a setback or a health problem, or maybe even a temporary financial loss or something like that. But Pluto Mars is one of the most regenerative, persevere and you'll be fine kinds of transits. I mean, for example, in the I Ching, one thing that comes to mind is hexagram number 7, which is called the army. And remember, the 6th house was called the joy of Mars, and it was the place of military. And the idea was that as long as you're managing the crises in front of you and you're managing the difficulties and things that crop up maturely with, you know, don't let your frustration get in the way, just deal with whatever in front of you, whatever is in front of you. And you'll find that whatever looks like a temporary setback is actually, it ends up being an integral part of the step-by-step process of how you achieve victory. So I see this for Taurians as a moment of like, if your faith feels tested or challenged, there's, you know, there's actually good fortune coming at the end of this, but there's some need to persevere. And I know it's trite, but like, look at whatever's coming and the necessary steps that you have to take to handle it as part of a blessing that's actually going to be coming through. And the reason I feel confident saying that is that you also, as a Taurus, you've just had Saturn and Jupiter turn direct in your 10th house. Those planets are going to get moving. It's good that you have Jupiter up there right now, both Mars, the full moon, the sun, they're all tapping into that Jupiter energy as they're passing through as well. And Jupiter's picking up speed, moving direct. So I do feel confident that, like, even though the 6th and the 12th look a little messy, that there's like a bridge over troubled waters here.
Yeah, I love that. It's perfect as well. But yeah, cool. All right, Gemini, a tutor, when you're ready, please.
All right.
All right. You guys have the Justice card. Okay, so in a lot of ways, yes, it can represent choice and partnerships and stuff, but the Justice card, when you really boil it down, is about commitment. And that's what this time is really asking you for, to commit to something. And it doesn't even have to be necessarily anything outside of yourself. This could be something that you've wanted for yourself or needed for yourself. So the Justice card showing up for you guys, in a lot of ways, this, funnily enough, this is Libra energy as well. It's really asking you to think about your commitments. Are there ones that need to be removed? Are there ones that need to be strengthened? Or are there ones that really need to get started? To clarify on that, and there they go again. all right, you have the Death card. So one way that you could read this is literally the death of a commitment, the end of a partnership, the end of something that comes up for you that you know has really seen its better days, right? It's time for it to be released. It's time for it to be removed. With the Death card as well, very often, and this is the other thing with the Justice card representing choice, this could be a moment, and I say this to people, when the Death card shows up for you, you have a chance to avoid a tower moment here, but it requires you doing the hard thing to say, this has seen its final days. So with the Justice card here, it's almost like the universe is saying to you, if you release this now, I will hold back the river, right? The banks will either burst, or you can create a little tributary and pull some of it away so that everything can continue easily.
Nice. Yeah, if I had to add anything astrologically to that, I would mention that this full moon in Aries is landing in your 11th house, which is the place of friends, groups, organizations, allies, with Mars opposite in the fifth house, which was in Indian astrology related to the joy derived from doing your dharma, which is your sense of duty, but also an expression of your unique gifts and service to others. So I wonder about having to make choices about whether or not you, the people in your life are the right people, if your creative gifts, or if there's enough joy in your life relative to your work or the kinds of people that you associate with. For example, if you found yourself in association with people that felt like they were at direct odds with the things that really bring you joy or the things that you feel you're best at or something like that, then there might be some way of exiting the situation right now, as Raph was saying, some way of getting out before it's too late and you compromise too much of yourself or get in over your head or have to take on a commitment that's more than you should or something like that. So be careful of the contracts you sign emotionally, psychologically, or literally, if they're really feeling like they're at cross purposes with something that feels really true to yourself, and especially things that bring you joy, happiness, or creative fulfillment, because that it's opposing Mars in your fifth, right? And then the eighth house, of course, is again, you think with Pluto squaring in the eighth, you're thinking of a place that has to do with other people's things, that the things that they expect from you or that you're obligated to give them or that they may be obligated to give you. So you also, the other one is like, be careful of what you're willing to take from other people right now as well, because it could lead to something not so great in the end, which I think is maybe a little bit of a warning with Justice and Death involved at the same time. And also with Jupiter and Saturn both turning direct in your ninth house, how does this square with your beliefs? You know, what are your guiding principles here? And those are trying to communicate with your fifth house, the trine between five and nine here. They're trying to communicate and say like, well, you know, are your guiding beliefs and your sense of joy and happiness involved with the decisions that you're making right now? Don't get in metaphorical bed with anyone that you don't want to in business, and just on any level, be really careful of that kind of stuff right now is what I'm getting.
That's brilliant. And yes, absolutely. The Justice card is also where you sign on the dotted line. And the Death card, interestingly enough, is a hard no. If you ask a yes, no question in with the tarot and you pull the Death card, you don't bother with any more cards because that's a no. So amazing. Thank you, Achyuta, for really digging into that. All right. For Cancer, when you're ready, just say when.
Ready.
Oh, of course, Cancer gets the Chariot card. I'm laughing because obviously this card represents the sign of Cancer, and obviously this transit is always going to be special because Cancer rules is ruled by the moon. So the fact that you've got the Chariot card here, I feel in a lot of ways this is about you starting what I would, if you know this term in the crypto sphere, the bull run. I kind of feel like this is the time for Cancer where they can start their own personal bull run. And in a lot of ways, I feel like this full moon for Cancerian people, especially with the Chariot card, is a push towards what you believe to be victory, what you believe to be success, and more importantly, the acquisition of that self-directed energy. It's almost like I kind of feel like saying to Cancers, it's time that you're getting your mojo back, but this time it's here to stay.
Nice.
All right, to clarify on that, the Nine of Cups. Oh yeah, we like this. All right, so with the Nine of Cups in the mix, this gives a really positive outlook. It also suggests that this is a time of true healing of the personal will. This is a time where really getting back to this is how I feel, this is how I'm going to step forward, and this is where I truly get to elevate what I feel is right for me. With the Nine of Cups here as well, it really gives me this energy of something about the self has been conquered, and now I'm, it's almost like living, you know, when you have like a really cathartic moment, and when you come out the other side of it, you feel like, you know what, I could demolish a tank right now. That's kind of what I feel is happening for Cancerians with this moon, especially with these cards and that Nine of Cups. And then finally, because it is a card of wish fulfillment, this feels like the answer to a prayer for something on a very selfish level. And when I say selfish, I don't mean like me, me. This is actually a very good thing for Cancerian people because they're extremely giving. So it's like for once you've made a wish or a desire that's about yourself, and now it's granted because you chose yourself in some way.
That is perfect. Let me show you guys. I'm going to share a story. I know my wife is not here to approve, but I know she'd be fine with it because this is something that she we're both used to sharing elements of our lives publicly as we teach and stuff like that. So I'm going to share you guys a little story about my wife who's a Cancer rising as this full moon has been coming through. So it lands in your 10th house if you're a Cancer. And I'm going to tell a story, and I think it could be something like this for all Cancers. That's why I'm telling it. So my wife is taking a 1-year sabbatical starting in January. And this is kind of the culmination of a feeling of, as Raph was saying, like, I need to do something for myself. And a big personal shift that's happening, right? At the same time that is happening, and she's in a sense coming into a very deep sense of personal alignment. I need to take a year off to just figure out where I'm at as a mom, as a spouse, as a professional, and reconfigure. So right as that's happening, and she's stepping back from things left and right, she got invited to run for the chair of a very prestigious committee in an organization that she belongs to, that she's served as a volunteer for a long time. So now she's at this crossroads where it's like, that is antithetical to what I want to do with the next year of my life. Right? But it's also kind of a wish fulfillment in the sense that I would really be able to make a big difference and do something I'm really passionate about and advance in my career. But now I'm at this crossroads because it's really like, well, that would take up a ton of my time in a year that's supposed to be about sabbatical. So when you see the full moon blossoming in your 10th house as a Cancer right now, here's the face of opportunity, potential advancement, a lot of busyness and activity and dynamism, maybe opportunities to start something, all that Aries inceptional energy in the 10th house, right? But then there's demands for your private life down in the fourth house that are presenting themselves equally as strong. The private life of the fourth could be home and family. It could be just private time, downtime, solitude, but it's more inward, of course. And then, the pressures from Pluto in the seventh could either be, well, what does my spouse want or my spouse think? Luckily, in this case, I'm like, you do what you want. I'm on your side, whatever you choose. I'm just like, not going to show up as coercive Pluto who's saying you ought to do this, because then that's the pressure that you could face right now. If not from a loved one, then generally speaking, Pluto in Capricorn's like, you'll never get ahead again if you don't take it. You know what I mean? Pluto in Capricorn can be very ruthless in telling you like, look, here's the wish fulfillment. It's right in front of you. And it's like a compromise that has to be made. And Pluto may be the voice here telling you to compromise something in a way that's not healthy or good necessarily. I would be very cautious of that with this particular Pluto, because in the seventh, you know, Capricorn obviously in the seventh is directly opposing the Cancerian energy in the first and could put that weight of like, hey, let's, you know, like no pain, no gain, baby, you know, it's like, let's go. And so, you know, I always think of that Nine of Cups card as potentially being like, I don't know, looking a gift horse in the mouth, or feeling entitled to something, or perhaps being self-satisfied and setting itself up through hubris for some kind of fall. So there may be, in other words, just a number of different factors on your plate, you know, things on your plate right now. And maybe there's too much and you have to make some choices about what to prioritize. And the only thing I would say here is that you have to be really cautious that you're not exerting too much in the way of the 10th and the 7th in your chart, which are going to be social conformity, achievement, you know, all that kind of exhilarated outward energy versus the needs of the 4th, which are much more, inward and private.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that as well. When you look at the image, I've just pulled the Chariot card from the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. When you look at the Chariot card, it's got the two sphinxes on it, so the light and the dark one. And this is where we get this idea of, you know, really finding it within ourselves to balance our wants and needs with the wants and needs of the outside world as well. And that's where that idea of conquering the aspect of self comes in as well. I'm really chuffed for her. I think it would be great. Obviously, it has to be her choice. But yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, I felt for a long time that 2022 in terms of Cancerians is going to be a big year for their career. Yeah. Don't know why, I feel that. All right, for Leo, when you're ready, just say when.
Now.
Leo has the Hanged Man. All right, so there's a few ways that we could look at this. The first one that I want to say, if you're a Leo, take time right now to really take stock of everything that you've experienced up until this moment. So I'm not telling you not to act. It's an Aries full moon after all, and you know, we've got that Mars Pluto square, so you're going to have to act, but make sure that space that you are choosing to move forward from is from the deepest well within you, the one that is connected to spirit, the one that is connected to the universe, whatever you want to call it. The other way that you could look at this as well, where is it that you have given too much, that you give too much, and where is it that now is a time where bringing the creativity and the beauty of life, let alone being a Leo, is really going to help you at this moment in time. I like this card, but I often say to people, it's a time of reassessment and reevaluation. So if you're a Leo, this is a time where really going within is where you're going to get the most answers, where you're going to get the most understanding. And then to clarify on that, you have, that's lovely, the Ace of Cups, right? So that big Leonine heart that you're known for, this is a time to really get into that space, to really ask yourself, what do I love? What do I care for? And more importantly, how can I nurture and nourish myself with the gifts that I have on the internal space, or rather in the internal space? Because it is the Ace of Cups as well, this does suggest a new beginning of putting yourself first, but not in like that, I'm a Leo, me way. More in a case of, I'm going to nurture and nourish myself the way that I do other people, or even mentor yourself in some way, shape, or form.
Nice. I like this one a lot. There's some really cool aspects that I was picking up on as you were talking there. Here's Leo on the ascendant. One of the things we can see is that as Mercury is stationing and now direct this week, it's doing so in a in Antitia with Neptune in Pisces in the eighth house if you're a Leo. While you also have this cross of energies with the Mars, Sun, full moon, Aries across the Libra Aries axis, that's your third and ninth house. I just did a video not long ago about some of the misconceptions of the sign of Libra. And one of the things I mentioned was ambivalence, and that ambivalence is not, some people will criticize people who are ambivalent. Oh, you can't make a choice or whatever. But spiritually, intellectually, you know, ambivalence is the sign of sages in almost every culture. By that, I mean people who can see both sides of something and end up having what maybe appears to other people like conflicted feelings or views about something. That's actually a sign of intelligence. It's like saying the opposite of a great truth is not a falsehood, but another great truth. Sometimes the Libran mind is going to perceive things like that and sees, as Saturn in Libra does, for example, its exaltation is in Libra. Saturn sees the necessity of all opposites, even when we really don't like an opposite. And there's even reason, broadly speaking, to believe that someone or something is unjust or evil or dark or bad. But from the kind of grand cosmic sense, the sage sees with equal eyes. And that's not something that's really, it's not valued in our everyday life. And sometimes it can even be, you know, like people will use that kind of equal vision as a way of escaping moral responsibility or action or choice or something like that. But in this case, what I like is that you may have conflicted thoughts and feelings about things right now, if you're a Leo, in terms of where you should act, who you should serve, what you should give your time, energy, and attention to. And I think there's some kind of emotional risk that you need to take. You've got the Mercury in Libra turning direct in the third house, hitting Neptune in the eighth, something that you deeply care about, but that may not look good to others, or something you feel very deeply, but you know, it's like, I don't want to look a certain way. I don't want to be misunderstood or something like that. And I think the thing that I was getting from that Ace of Cups, along with the Hanged Man, is about taking a risk, even when you could see acting in two totally different ways and you're not sure you're doing the right thing, but there's an emotional risk, and you'll serve your joy, you'll serve your happiness if you take that risk, regardless of what others may think, so long as it's also rooted in something that you deeply care about, as Raph was saying.
Yeah, love that. That's brilliant. Absolutely. That's interesting because I'm a Leo rising, so I'm like, okay, cool, I can work with that.
Totally.
Brilliant, thank you. All right, for Virgo. Okay, there we go.
Oh, you got it.
Virgo has the Lovers. So this card, yes, is love and relationships and partnerships. These are definitely things that are going to be highlighted for you at this time. But the thing with the Lovers card, it also represents choice. It also represents, sometimes it can be a true quandary of what does my heart say and what does my head say? And so this could be a time where, if you're a Virgo, really considering those things and maybe even wanting to shut the world out for what feels right to you right now could be a part of this. So if you find that you're feeling a little bit like the Hermit card, which is Virgo ruled, it would make sense to me. But it's not kind of like I'm going to shut myself in a cave. It's more, I just want my bubble and whatever or whoever is in that, right? And it's like just putting that, the blinkers up, let's say. To add to that, oh, nice. You have the 10 of Pentacles. So for some of you, this could be a time where considerations about moving, about different homes, different places to live might come up for you. The Ten of Pentacles isn't just money and resources. I'll talk about that in a sec. It's also a dwelling, right? A physical home. And when you got the Lovers card there, there is almost this, we'll stay in here and everyone and everything else can stay out there. And then when you add to this the financial aspect, this could be a time where you understand on a deep level, if I make this choice now, it really does lead to gold in some way. However, it's not going to be easy because it does suggest that you're going to have to isolate or alienate someone or something from your life in order to get that gold. So it's kind of like a question of, is it really worth it?
Nice. Those two cards, when we look at Virgo rising, they, it was just so I remember, it was Lovers and Ten of Pentacles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Interestingly, the full moon takes place across the second and eighth house axis. And so the potential for conversations about resources, money, business, and assets within the context of meaningful relationships is right there. You got the full moon in the house of, like, say, spouse or partner's money or other people's assets, resources, or esteem in general. And then you have the sun, Mars, Mercury turning direct, all in the second house of your own resources, and what belongs to you or what comes about through your own efforts, skills, and abilities. So there's a conversation happening around those two places this month. And then with Pluto squaring in the fifth, you know, let's just say that when I think about this, I think about the potential to, you know, some relationships are very expedient for us, you know, and they're going to get us to where we need to go in the long run. And in the short term, the compromises, the disagreements, the small stuff, we just have to set it aside. And Pluto in the fifth might be just sort of Machiavellian enough to get us to understand that. And we really probably need to. On the other hand, you have to be careful of getting used or using someone or getting taken advantage of somehow, or what the motivations are for certain kinds of relationships and what values or assets people have or expect of us or whatever. And, you know, what kinds of things might be lurking in the shadows of those relationships and value exchanges in them. So those are the things that come to mind for me if you're a Virgo this month. And remember that this is probably connected to an intimate relationship because, again, your ascended ruler, Mercury, turning direct in the antitia with Neptune in the seventh house of marriage and relationships. So there's some connection here. I would also be careful about, like, giving a lot of money to someone who needs it, like, you know, or getting stuck in a relationship where there's some kind of codependency around money or resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with those two, because it could seem on the surface to be one thing and underneath be something quite different. All right, for Libra.
Go ahead.
Okay. Libra has the sun card. Nice. So it's kind of cool as well, because obviously the sun is in Libra at the moment. So it's kind of perfect, actually. I'm not going to say you get a free pass at this time, but I am going to say you get an easier ride of it. Remember, the sun card in tarot, it's kind of like, I always say to people, it enhances your blessings and it diminishes your challenges. So even if it falls next to, say, like the Ten of Swords, whatever could be really challenging, it's not going to be that bad. And this actually suggests to me in some way, there's a personal realization here of how your path is now actually clear. It's almost like you're looking at things and thinking, you know what, this could have been a lot worse, but actually now I can see, like, literally where I want to go and how this is going to happen for me. To clarify on that, you have the Page of Swords. All right, so there's a few ways this could show up. For some people, that news that you've been waiting for painstakingly, you know, behind the scenes, whether you're waiting for a letter or an email or a phone call for something to move ahead, this time could very well bring that to you. Definitely possible. With the Page of Swords here as well, this is a moment at which you could initiate something. And I kind of feel like Aries and Libra actually are probably the two signs. Like, if you initiated something now, it would probably go quite well for you, especially if it's come from a place of personal understanding or realization. And then finally, with that Page of Swords, quite frankly, this could be a moment where you come to realize that someone's been talking a bit of crap about you.
I was just going to say that.
Right. Or maybe they've said something, you know, something that's been said about you that's negative now comes to light. Right. You get to see it for all it is. but you can use that with the Sun card to push you forward and say, yeah, okay, that's cool. I'm going to use that as fire to get me to where I want to be.
Perfect. Yeah. And when we look at the Libra Aries axis, that's your first and seventh house if you're a Libra rising. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about this is, of course, Mercury in Libra just turning direct in your first house. But if you can, again, look as it's turning direct, it hits the Antitia with Neptune in the sixth, the place of conflict, but also a planet of deception. So when I saw that Page of Swords, I instantly thought, oh God, you know, one thing I would say in the positive here is if you're dealing with intractable people, just get strategic. I mean, obviously you don't want to do anything unethical. I think that could get you into trouble here. The Sun with the Page to me says, like, if you have to get a little tricky, as long as you're ultimately coming from a good place, good intention, your upright, moral, virtuous kind of Sun qualities, but you may have to just get strategic, you know, because you're dealing with someone or something difficult, probably someone with the full moon in Aries in the seventh and Mars sort of debilitated in your first house. Just as long as you're not doing anything that could get you in trouble or that's totally unethical, but using a little bit of strategic timing, tact, you know, talking to the right people, you may have to circumnavigate something rather than going directly at it. And I get the feeling that that may bring a little bit more success than trying to go directly at someone or something, but also be prepared for people potentially going that way at you right now. And that's the thing that I think could be a little bit more painful, or coming to realize that someone or something you've been dealing with hasn't been totally above board.
Yeah, absolutely. One way that you could probably utilize that Page of Swords energy as well, if you're a Libra, play dumb.
That's right? Yes.
Don't be dumb, but play dumb. All right. For Scorpio,
Ready.
Wow. Yeah, of course. Scorpio gets the Death card. say no more, right? So the fact that you guys have this means this could be a moment, actually, not only of personal power, but it could really see you uncovering or getting very clear on what your personal desires are and what it is that you're now ready to truly release, end, or let go of. And this might be, you know, I hazard a guess here, this might be something that you've really struggled with for a long time. This could be a moment where it's like, okay, you know what, I know this has been here. I know I've been working on it. I know I haven't quite conquered it yet, but I'm ready. And it's like you're facing this with newfound courage, newfound desire to create change, but on your own terms. You know, so it's coming from within rather than the external world. To clarify on that, we have the Sun card, right? I mean, to say personal illumination really speaks volumes. The Sun card coupled with the Death card, right? So whatever you're releasing, whatever might feel like, oh gosh, to let this go is going to feel like cutting my own arm off. But the Sun card is here that basically says whatever you do release is either quickly replaced with something of true value or beauty. And it could just as easily be a moment where you feel like you're coming into the light. Like literally, I'm hearing the words of a song that I like to listen to from time to time called Stepping Into the Light. And I kind of feel like this is one of those moments. And then finally, because it is the Sun card, and you're ruled by Pluto and Mars, there's this element here of you being reborn and refreshed. The warning that comes from this pairing that I'm getting intuitively, as you come out of whatever it is that you're releasing, this is a time where you need to treat yourself as you would treat a newborn baby. You would keep it safe. You would keep them warm. You would keep them looked after, swaddled, well-fed. Treat yourself with those same cotton gloves as you release this thing, as you would a new life in some way.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's just really great advice. Got some things here. So Scorpio rising, some interesting things to take a look at here in the chart. One is that this is all taking place, the full moon in Aries, Mars and the Sun in Libra across your sixth and 12th house axis. 12th house is called the place of the evil daimon, the evil spirit. The sixth, the place of bad fortune. What's interesting to me is that right after this happens, the Sun is going to move into your first house if you're a Scorpio. So whatever this culminating, these culminating tensions are in these two sort of archetypally difficult houses, there's, you know, when these houses get hit, there's often coming into a stressful place, just to be totally honest. It's whether it's health, whether it's fatigue, just existential fatigue, some losses, some challenges, some setbacks, some interpersonal conflicts, par for the course of the full moon across this axis, honestly. And Tauruses are dealing with this to a certain extent right now as well. We talked about, for example, with Tauruses, we talked about the fortune card. And what was the other one? Do you remember what went with the fortune?
In which sign?
Taurus rising. It was fortune. It was Wheel of Fortune.
I had the Wheel of Fortune. And
the Five of Pentacles.
Five of Pentacles. Yeah.
And we talked about a challenge that if you deal with constructively, step by step, ends out to be a blessing, right?
Yeah.
Very similar energy here, actually, for our flip sign of Scorpio, where you're seeing the full moon across the difficult house axes, then the Sun moves into your first house, which is a very illuminating place, honestly. And then the other interesting thing here is that if I had to say what kind of transformation in particular that you may be overcoming or recovering from or something like that, again, let's look at that Mercury turning direct in the Antitia with Neptune in the fifth. The reason I think that's so interesting, and I'm doing a little bit of, I'm juggling things around a little bit, is you've got, you know, Mercury is in your 12th, but rules your eighth, also rules your 11th. When you look at that in connection with Neptune in the fifth, I think, for example, of things or people upon which you are dependent that give you something good or that give you joy. For example, someone likes to drink. It gives them happiness in the evenings. But it's getting to a point where it's unhealthy or it's starting to ruin a relationship. On the other hand, someone that you're reliant upon business or creatively or something like that, but there's something, it's just taking too much from you now. I could see unhealthy dependencies that are sort of giving you joy, but your system is starting to say no more, that there's something there that needs to be processed, let go of, and then there's a very healthy new beginning. The other clue that I get about that this might be the case, that it might involve a person or a relationship in particular that's kind of taking too much from you now, draining you in some way, is because when the Sun moves into Scorpio right away, it is now on a crash course with an opposition to Uranus in your seventh house in the next couple of weeks. And so if I was Scorpio rising, you know, I would say, look at who or what are your unhealthy forms of dependency right now. Maybe they gave you something for a while that was good, but you don't want to take beyond the, you know, there's an expiration date for everything. And if you keep taking beyond that, then suddenly it gives poison rather than a blessing. So that's what I would be thinking about, or at least of the things I would be thinking about.
Amazing. All right. Sagittarius.
All right.
Saggies, you have the Devil card. All right. So again, we talk about release here. All right. But what I tend to say to people here with the Devil card, where is it that something has run away with itself? All right. So if you're a Sagittarius, something like this could now be highlighted to you, where you're really taking a moment to say, okay, I'm not in control here. And this could be a really powerful moment of catching yourself in that moment of saying, well, I'm not in control. I don't have a choice here. Actually, yeah, you do. The other thing with the Devil card, it's about our obsessions, not just our addictions, but our obsessions. What is it at this moment in time that you just don't seem to be able to let go of, that you just don't seem to? It's kind of like, you know, when you've got a scab, you know you shouldn't pick it, right? The Devil card is highlighting this for you if you're a Sagittarius. Now, to get out of the doom and gloom for a second, the beauty of the Devil card is having the best that you can have, regardless of the cost. And so in some ways, if you can channel that in a positive way, this obsession, maybe channel it into learning something new, rather than picking at the scab, right? Because then that way you're arming yourself with knowledge or information in some regard. To clarify on that, you have the Three of Wands. All right. So the first thing that I want to say to you, Saggies, especially those of you that are in places that are heavily locked down still, that feeling that you have of just get me out, find a way to get yourself out that is constructive. All right, fine. So this could be a real time where new understandings of ways to interact with the world could come up for you. I would hope that you would find it, you know, that as a really positive way to get around this. The other thing with the Three of Wands, this tends to be quite a lucky energy, as I've come to understand it. But this Devil card almost suggests that this is not a time to rely on luck. This is not a time to kind of say to yourself, well, you know, it's always been all right up until now, so I'll just keep going the way that I have. This is a time to really take back control so that it's consciously led rather than, yeah, someone or something will come in at the right moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. I think we can see some correlates here with the astrology for sure. For example, right now, if you're a Sagittarius rising, you've got K2, the south node of the moon, and Venus in your first house, while Venus is moving into a square with Neptune around this time. Even though we're focusing on the full moon, Mars square Pluto, et cetera, this suggests susceptibility to illusion. This, especially Venus and K2 together, Venus in the south node, in particular in the first house, can speak to the unhealthy dependencies that the Devil card can point to, the compulsions that bind us. So be really careful about that, as well as any kind of quick fix solution that comes to your mind as a way of getting free. And that's exactly what Raph was saying in terms of if you feel pent up and you're like, I got to get free. That's the Venus K2 impulse in general, which we just have to be a little bit careful of right now if you're Sagittarius rising. At the same time, I think you also have to be a little bit careful because that same, where's that Neptune energy coming in? Through Mercury turning direct. So Mercury turning direct, hitting the Antitia with Neptune, Venus squaring that Neptune. So you've got two different planets simultaneously hitting Neptune in the fourth. What would the 11th house Libran energy, the Mars in Libra, for example, point to, especially squaring Pluto down here in your second? Some kind of alliance or people or group or friend or opportunity that beckons that looks like, well, this will set me free. We could actually set you back financially, or something that promises more that it can actually deliver, especially around business, friends, associations, financial opportunities, work opportunities. I'd be really careful right now. It's not that nothing could be gained. It's just probably not as much as you might think it would, given the strong presence of Neptune from the 11th to the 4th and Venus in your first heading to Neptune in the 4th. It's not going to fix it all, probably. That's something to be aware of. At the same time, you know, the full moon in your fifth house, it does seem to me that the full moon in the fifth house has a lot to do with, you know, am I happy? And the feeling of being stuck or wanting greater freedom or happiness. Remember, the fifth house was called the joy of Venus, a full moon in the joy of Venus's house. And also Venus in your first house speaks to the need for greater pleasure or happiness. But with Neptune kind of pushing things somewhat subtly and invisibly down in your fourth, with a debilitated Mars in your 11th, squaring Pluto in the second, I just would be very careful about who and what you partner with or link yourself to in an attempt to solve or fix things, and making sure that it's not a rash or impulsive choice, or that it's not diluted in some way.
Yeah. All right, for Capricorn.
Okay.
All right. They have the World card. That's really interesting because the World card is Saturn. So I kind of like that for the Capricorns. So when it comes to the World card, I would say this is a moment where your community is going to be very, very important to you. The World card has really come to mean that for me. This could also be a time where having to school or still your emotions, certainly some of the past understandings that you have in regards to your community or people that you're tied to at the moment. So take a minute. Like, this would be a time where, and I say this to people when the Five of Swords shows up with certain cards. Just because you don't like the source of the information doesn't mean you should ignore it if it's good information. And so if you're a Capricorn, this wild card basically says, if there's someone in your community or your sphere of existence, let's say, if they're giving you good info or good intel, forget whether you like them or not, right? Take that stuff out of it and just take the advice, because if it's good advice, it's going to be good advice. To clarify on that, we have the Seven of Pentacles. So we've got an interruption here. On the wider world stage, this does speak to potentially, this does speak to more challenges with supply lines. I'm sorry to say, it does also speak to some challenges with for or around agriculture in some way, shape or form. And then because it is the Seven of Pentacles, we also need to talk about the part of this that suggests maybe something that you have tried to put into practice just doesn't get off the ground. You know, that moment where you've put so much hard work, time and effort into something, and you know, it's not personal, it's just not enough. It just doesn't happen. Take a moment right now to really consider, can you put your time, energy or resources into better spaces in your life that actually stand a chance to come good? And then finally, when it comes to your community as a Capricorn, that Seven of Pentacles is really asking you to consider where you could bury a hatchet. Where is it that you've been the strong Capricorn and now you can put something down because it's just not relevant anymore?
Nice. Yeah, so a few things that come to mind for me about this one. One is that, you know, you've got this full moon across the 10th and 4th house axis if you're a Cap rising, both squaring Pluto in your first house. So it feels to me like a very existential moment and crossroads around work, identity, home and family. What's at the foundation of your life might be changing, where you're living might be changing. I think of the world and Seven of Pentacles together in this respect as a time of like evaluating the fruits of a full cycle. And where am I going to go from here? Or being forced into such a situation. For example, the company has to lay some people off, or there's a feeling of like being done with a contract. A lot of people in DC, for example, that I worked with would be on contracts. And then when the government contract was up, it would be like, where do I go from here? You know? So what some now? Period. Yeah. Like a what now moment. But it's deeper than just what now around say, where am I living or where am I working? It gets right down into the sense of core identity because of Pluto also being in that first house. So it looks to me like a real crossroads moment. It's interesting to note that Venus is your 10th house ruler. Venus is in the 12th at the moment too. So, you know, and then what's going to happen, your 10th house ruler in December is going to hit Pluto in your first and go through a retrograde. So if you look forward for Caps, this is probably just the beginning of a pretty deep moment of kind of personal inventory and going like, where am I? What am I doing with my life? Taking stock of who I am, and especially around career between now and the end of the year. And again, that's just given that we see this drama between the 10th, the 4th, and the 1st with the ruler of the 10th, Venus, in the 12th and moving toward this epic retrograde in your first house with Pluto by December.
Yeah, love that. And other ways that you could read the world card as well, mastery and or plateaus, new levels of things. So yeah, I love that you brought in with the career, because it definitely feels like that as well. All right, for Aquarius, yay, that's me. Also me. When you're ready, just say what.
Ready.
All right, okay, nice. So in this deck, the Tree of Life card, as I read and I've come to understand this card, it speaks specifically to divine intervention and assistance. Now, caveat with that, because when people hear that, they're like, well, excellent. I can just do what I like and it's all going to work out. Sometimes divine intervention and assistance looks like us not getting the thing that we want. not getting that free pass or the green light. And very often it's because whatever else is planned for us in accordance with divine will and our free will to choose is something better or greater. And so the path that is closed to you now throughout this period as an Aquarius may be highlighting to you a path that isn't actually for you. And so if there is a delay or a stop or something that doesn't quite go ahead, don't fret about it, because it means that they're really, you know, it sounds really like cliche, but it does mean that there is actually something better. That's the challenging way that you could see this. So on the brighter side, this could literally be someone or something shows up to smooth your path, like literally divine intervention or assistance. To clarify on this, we have the Two of Wands. Nice. All right. So we've got the Two of Wands here. So this is right action in some way, shape, or form, which is really nice. The Two of Wands also speaks to the energy of affluence. So this could be a time where a path opens up to you that could lead to the abundance or riches, whatever you want to call it, that you really hope for. It's definitely possible. What you need to know is that that path isn't going to be, it's not a straight line. There are going to be moments where you'll have to meander on this path. The other thing with the Two of Wands, this is about doing something that goes against the grain for Aquarians and really digging into that space where you say, this isn't about we, this is about me. And so you're kind of going against the grain of what feels right for you at times. I guess the best advice I could give you as an Aquarius is maybe it's time to get out of your own way.
Nice. Here is Aquarius rising on the screen, and a couple of things that come to mind. One, as this is coming through, I think Raph's right about the potential for some kind of fortunate resource or connection or person coming into your life. Jupiter's just turned direct in your first house. Usually that's a sign of potential abundance, blessings, confidence, kind of the wind at your back kind of feeling, especially when it turns direct. At the same time, Jupiter rules the 11th house in your birth chart. And you can see in that 11th house right now that Venus, the goddess of good fortune, is also there in a place of friends, benefactors, allies, groups. So there's a positive connection coming in from the place of groups and allies and resources. Or it was a place that was called the place of acquisition. And so Venus hitting Jupiter right now, between those two places, Venus is also hitting Neptune in the second place, the place of resources and money, while Mercury is hitting the Antitia from the ninth to the second. So actually, to specify this a little bit, I couldn't help but wonder, given that the full moon is happening in the third and we've got the stellium up in the ninth, Mercury again turning direct there, hitting Neptune in the second, but wouldn't this be a great time to meet an influential teacher, an influential mentor, an influential guide, someone who comes into your life essentially and says, let me show you the way. I think a little bit of, say the name of the first card again, Raph.
It was the Tree of Life.
Right, the Tree of Life. I don't know that card so well. The thought that came to my mind, though, was just that obviously the Tree of Life is going to be, for example, that image is used in the yogic tradition as a reference to knowledge, right? The Tree of Life is also a tree of, there's another tree in the Tree of Knowledge, Tree of Life, Tree of Knowledge, the Tree of the Knowledge of Life and Understanding. I was just struck by the image of the Two of Wands in association with that as a mentor, a teacher, a guide, someone that gives resources to you that may not be just financial, but it could also be based in learning a new craft, a new skill, a new trade, some kind of resource like that coming in. Does that make any sense to you, Raph? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you think, so in the Thoth deck by Crowley, the Two of Wands was called Dominion. And that kind of tracks, especially when you think about the figure holding the world in the hand. Like, this is a deeply wise person on the card that we see. So yeah, absolutely. And usually, like I said, because this card has a link to that affluent kind of energy, it represents very often people or situations that have nothing to prove but have a lot to give. So yeah, absolutely. That's really kind of exciting, actually.
And could it also represent something that, say, the Aquarius has to give, something that they could be called to share or give or bless others with, some knowledge or ability that they might be called to teach?
Absolutely. Why? Mainly because it's a two. Twos are all about partnership and balance. So it's not just about what you're given. You have to get, like, in order to really gain, you have to give something, right? And I kind of feel like that tracks with the Tree of Life card as well, because there's that idea of divine intervention and assistance, but also it being, okay, well, it works for you, but it might withhold something from you as well. So yeah, I love that.
Perfect.
All right. So for Pisces.
Last but not least, always.
Never least. All right.
Ready.
Pisces has the Emperor. Okay. So I like this actually for Pisces. I think that this is going to be a time that really highlights to you where you're ready to take charge, where you're ready to actually do something about all of the things that you've been experiencing. I also feel this is a time where a lot of Pisceans will probably have that inner fire to create a different environment for themselves. Maybe in, you know, the external environment, but certainly in the lifescape in general. There'll be a time where it's like, you know, I'm going to make these changes. I'm going to push ahead with this. Also, as well, this card can represent physical stuff. So this might even be a time where you marshal your physical resources to say, actually, you know what? I want to get fitter, or I want to get stronger. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of those physical things might come in as well as the lifescape. To clarify on that, you have the Six of Swords. So speaking of environments, for some of you, this could be a time where you consider a move. For some of you, this could be a time that you consider some kind of travel. And for others, this could be a time where, because it is the Emperor, so we do need to talk about challenges or issues with the boss, with the work, with the career in some way, that could now start to subside, but it's because you're refusing to back down. It's kind of like by taking charge, you're like, okay, this situation's going to change and I'm going to be in the lead of that change.
Nice. And when I look here at the Pisces rising chart, one thing that I'm struck by is that we're seeing the full moon in the second opposite, you know, Sun, Mars, Mercury turning direct all in the eighth. When you see the square to Pluto in the 11th, I get the feeling of the potential to also clear a debt. Like when I think of that Six of Swords image and almost like moving a transition, moving away from a period of sorrow or difficulty. Yep. Maybe you had a hard boss in your life. Maybe it was a spouse. Maybe it was a credit card company. And you felt indebted or entangled or trapped by the situation and the power it had over you, the authority, the obligation, or something like that. Maybe it's a time now where it can be let go of and you can be moving away from it. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you pay off your student debt. It's like, oh my God, you know, this is the best thing ever. I paid off my student debt. I'm no longer prisoner to the man. It's like, well, you don't really have anything in the positive, but you don't have anything anymore in the negative. Maybe it's something, you know, just something like that, where there's some kind of balancing of power dynamics, some kind of earning back of respect or dignity, clearing of debts, the things like that. And I would also be aware of the fact that someone may walk away from you too. You know, I mean, we have people that walk away from us in life and sometimes serve as a mirror to show us that we were demanding too much. And that could be emotional or spiritual or something like that. So if we see someone or something that's parting ways from us, and we can accept that and take that feedback humbly and not try to rail against it or try to control or demand something or make it hard on someone because they want to part ways with us, I think that will serve us better in the long run right now, if you're a Pisces rising. although it's not, I don't see Pisces rising individuals typically as the type who are like into vengeance and trying to maintain control over people no matter what. But, you know, sometimes
not Pisces, overtly.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say sometimes it could be a little bit more, almost more like on the emotional level. So just being kind of aware of that, letting people go if they want to go. Because, you know, in some ways it's like, if someone wants to walk away from us, even if it hurts, you don't really want to be in a relationship with someone on any level if they really don't want to be in one with you, you know? So anyway, those are my thoughts, but I think there's just so it doesn't sound totally negative. My general feeling was the of that combination of the cards you drew, Raph, was the feeling of being able to walk away from something that had maybe some too much power over us.
Yeah, that's perfect, actually. I really like that. And it's actually a better reframe. For me, yeah, I think the way that I read it was almost like you're taking charge to say, I'm going to let that go, or I'm going to be past that now. But I really like the way that you said it, because it makes sense. And when you see the Emperor as someone or something that has the power, and then the Six of Swords is like literally being released or moving away from this. So yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Well, we did it. We got through all 12 signs. I want to just say a big thanks to Raphael Ray for being here today. I find that Raph's intuition and his ability to speak really fluidly with the cards opens up my own with the astrology space. And so it's a really wonderful partnership in terms of just being able to, riff off from one another and really enjoy it. And obviously we've done, for people who watch my channel, you know, we've done this a few times before, and every time we just get really great feedback. So I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as we did today.
Yeah, same. Thank you so much. What I love about the way that you put the astrology in with it as well. Once you say things about the astrology, I'm like, yeah, and I can see this in the cards as well now. So yeah, it's great. Yeah. As always, so happy to be here. Thank you so much. Again, for those of you that are considering taking a tutor's course, I took it myself and it was really brilliant. So if you're thinking about it, just do it.
That is really sweet of you. Thank you for that. It was a huge honor for me to have someone of your knowledge base and come to learn more about astrology with me. And I highly recommend everyone who wants to learn more about tarot, listen to what Raph has to say, because it's not just your knowledge of the cards, but it's your intuition in relation to their associations that I find just fluid and magical. And it opens up my own ability to see things too. So love it. If you guys want to check out more from Raph, go to Radiant Reality. That's R-E-Y-D-I-A-N-T, radiantreality.com. There are all sorts of things that you can learn about Raph. He's got a YouTube channel, radiantreality.com. Wonderful regular updates on astrology and tarot. So be sure you check that out. And I will also, since Raph mentioned it, I will mention, if you're also interested in my upcoming course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, go to nightlightastrology.com, click on the first year course page. You can learn more about it. Early bird rate, payment plan, need-based tuition options, all available. We start on November 13th coming up. It was a real privilege to have Raph in class, like I said. And so I really awesome of you to help me plug it here. I really appreciate that. Raph will also have a version of this talk on his channel. So you'll be able to see it reposted there. And also this will be, you know, after it processes, I guess it'll be on my YouTube channel to rewatch in case you missed your sign or something like that. Anything else that people should know about how to find you, Raph?
No, just on YouTube and my website. But yeah, it'd be great to have you. Head over, hit subscribe, and hopefully I'll see you in the comments.
And Raph also has, I believe you have your annual crowd fundraiser going on coming up, right? We both have ours coming up.
Yes, I did have plans for that, but unfortunately Kickstarter have knocked me back. So I'm not sure that will go ahead, but either which way, there will definitely be another tarot course next year. So
yeah,
stay peeled.
And someone having done Kickstarter for a long time, it's pretty common for there to be a little bit of a process getting it all set up. So watch for Raph's course coming up at any rate, on tarot, which will be happening again in 2022, right?
Yeah, March of 2022.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you guys, everybody, for watching today. And we will see you.